Hey there, listeners. Welcome to the Leadership is Changing podcast. My name is Dennis Giannoutsos, and I'm your host. I had a wonderful interview with a guy by the name of Roger Martin, and he's built a 30-year career in sales and marketing and C-level leadership, and he's the co-founder and CEO of two national franchise brands, Rockbox Fitness and Beam Light Sauna. And there's a whole lot of other businesses he has, and it's under another big banner around Thrive Brands. But Roger and I had a great conversation about things, and he talks about us learning persuasion and influence. That's a key thing. But the other thing was impacting others. How do we leave a wake and not just a ripple? And I thought that was really awesome. And another thing he actually shared with us was, with myself as we were talking, is that don't follow politicians, follow real leaders. An interesting statement. So let's get into the interview.
Welcome to Leadership is Changing. Each week, we and our guests provide information and insights through exploring leading change. This is taking your leadership to another level by finding the balance between executive excellence and personal well-being through stories that inspire real change. It's time to adapt in our fast-moving world when leadership is changing with your host, Dennis Giannoutsos.
Hey there, listeners. Welcome to another wonderful episode of the Leadership is Changing podcast. Great to have you here with us. I've got a great guest with me today. His name is Roger Martin. Roger, a massive welcome to you.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you having me on.
Great. Now, I normally ask my guests whereabouts they are in the world today. So where are you?
Yeah, I live in and work in Charlotte, North Carolina here in the United States.
Excellent. Have you always lived in the States?
Yep, I've lived all over the States. So, of course, as you know, we've got a pretty large country here, and I've lived in literally all four corners of the Northwest and Spokane, Washington, Boston, Los Angeles, and even Florida. But now I kind of settled in the Mid-South, as we call it here in Charlotte, North Carolina, which is on the East Coast.
Should I ask you which is your favorite, or was it a loaded question?
You know, you can, and I'll tell you, it's Charlotte. Again, I grew up in the Northwest, you know, Seattle area, kind of in that general area. And loved Los Angeles. I love California. Unfortunately, 40 million people feel the same way. So it's just too many rats in one maze for me. But I lived in Texas and I lived out in Georgia. But Charlotte is just, it's a great city because it's big enough to have, you know, the major sporting teams and get all the concerts and, you know, has culture. But it's not so crazy you can't get around. And it's still, it was a wonderful place to raise a family. So I've been here for the last 17, I'm 53 now. I've been here for the last 17 years. And I don't have any plans to move anytime soon. So this is, after 8 moves corporately, this is my home now.
Okay, cool. I was going to ask you that question, where's next? But you've answered it, so it's good.
Right here. I'm done. Mm. I'm done. I did my 8 moves, you know, with different promotions and opportunities. So
hobbies, sports, interests, do you sort of follow?
Yeah, fun question. So, you know, so many people and so many of my peers grew up and were huge sports fans and played all the sports. And I played all the sports, most of them. But I was never great at them, if I'm really honest, which is kind of ironic that I own a fitness franchise, you know, a boxing for fitness franchise as a living. But growing up, instead of having like Michael Jordan on my wall, I had pictures of Eddie Van Halen and, you know, other guitar players. And I was a rock guitarist growing up from the time I was, I guess, 12, 14, you know, all the way through high school and college. And so my heroes were rock stars. You know, and I still love sports and watch, you know, football religiously and basketball, but that was never what I aspired to be. I always loved the lights, the stage. You know, I love music. It's part of my soul. And that even today is, you know, I'd rather watch a concert on YouTube than the latest sporting event, unless it's, you know, the Super Bowl or a finals or something.
Right. Yeah. Which normally has a concert in the middle of it anyhow, right? So
exactly. This is true. Yeah. This is true.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm going to get to, because I'm going to sort of ask that question around the rock side of things, but you've had a 30-year career in sales, marketing, C-level leadership, and you're the co-founder and CEO of two national franchise brands, Rockbox Fitness and Beam Light Sauna. Tell us a little bit more about that. And is that where the name Rockbox comes from? Is it around the rock sort of side?
Great question. Yeah. So in a very abbreviated sense, I went to university. And after I finished university, I got a job with a company called Eli Lilly, which is a big global pharmaceutical company. And I spent the next 25 years in 4 or 5 different companies in the pharmaceutical business for 25 years. And that's why I moved my family 8 times during the years all over the country, as I would get a promotion or there'd be another job opportunity with a new firm. And at the ripe age of, I guess it was 46, 47, I decided, and I was at that point, I was a chief operating officer. So I started as a sales rep. I finished my corporate career as a chief operating officer at a pharmaceutical firm. And I just decided, and it was really at a trade show in Barcelona, Spain, of all places, where I realized I don't want to do this anymore. Like, I have climbed the mountain. I got to the top rung, and it's not what I thought it was going to be. I'm also just burnt out on the whole thing. I have nothing against the industry. I actually think that it, you know, creates a lot of life-saving medicines and does a lot of things right. Does some things wrong, like most big businesses, but does a lot of things right. And I'm grateful for everything I learned, the leadership skills, the sales and persuasion and influence skills, and just everything that I was able to learn from that, I'm very, very grateful for. But my time in my mind had come to an end. And just coincidentally, I had met a gentleman who had two Boxing for Fitness studios. So think group fitness, working out. I think you're in New Zealand, you know, born out of Australia, was F45. So that kind of group fitness workout, but think that with the other side of the studio being boxing, Muay Thai bags and boxing bags. And you do both. You do a functional workout, and then you also do combinations on the bags that the instructor calls out. So I met this gentleman. He was looking to franchise. I was planning my exit from corporate America, and he wanted me to become his first franchisee. And I said, well, I actually am not interested in that, but I am interested in building a national brand with you. And if you're serious about this, I am passionate about health and fitness. I love combat sports. I love MMA. And I would love to build a brand with you. And he already had the concept. Like, nothing has changed about the workout because it's outstanding and he built a great product. But the branding and the wrapper around it, you know, had some room for improvement. And he knew that. And so we got together. We worked out a deal, 50-50. Kind of he brought all his knowledge. I put in the money. We created this company. And I joked with him. I said, now the first person I'm going to hire is going to be a marketing consultant. And they're going to tell us how to build this brand, the color scheme, everything. And it may include changing the name of your business that is really the foundation of this whole, of the product, of the service. And he said, I'm not opposed to changing the name. I'm not married to the name. He goes, but I am married to the woman who thought of the name. So I had to talk to his wife and explain that we may be changing the name. And to fast forward, you know, we did this market analysis and all these things. And I did a lot of due diligence. So it wasn't like I just jumped in with this, but it was really fast. It was like a 4-month process. And then we're in business together. And I wanted to call it, again, I told you my kind of love and my background. I wanted to call it Rockstar Boxing. And everyone was like, that doesn't quite work, Roger. It doesn't quite work. And, you know, we had different names. We tried lots of different stuff. And then my wife one day yelled up. I was up working in my home office that day, and I was upstairs and she was downstairs, and she just yelled up. She goes, how about Rockbox Fitness? And I literally, it was a lightning moment. I picked up the phone. I called Steve and I said, Rockbox, I got it. Good. We're done. We got it. And he loved it. And so the reason Rockbox is, yes, we box, we kickbox, but it's all set to, you know, like color changing lighting. Like when you go in, it's more in the dark, kind of, you know, working out, you know, lower lighting. And, you know, the lighting changes color with the music, just like it would on stage. You know, the music's, of course, at concert volume, way too loud, but a lot of fun. Then you've got an instructor who's on a mic calling the combinations for the people doing the boxing section to do, and then motivating the people on functional. And so it's, we always kind of joke, it's like going to a nightclub, except you leave with no bar bill and no hangover, you know? So it's a lot better for you and a lot more fun. And yeah, we created that back in 2017. And then fast forward through today, we got through COVID. We had about 25 studios open during COVID. We got every single studio through COVID, even with the mandatory closures here in the States, and every one of them reopened. And today we have 60, right around 60 studios open, a couple in pre-launch as well. Yeah. So it's been a hell of a ride. It's, you know, it was my first, I had done some entrepreneurial things, but this was my first, okay, I'm leaving a paycheck, health insurance, you know, stock options, all that kind of stuff. I just left it behind and started, you know, my own business. And Monday was scary. Tuesday was a little scary. And by Wednesday, I never looked back.
Awesome. I love that kind of story. I think it's really great. And yeah. Any plans to go international?
Yeah. So we've had talks with, of course, in the States, the quickest way to do that is go to Canada. So we've had several talks with a couple different firms in Canada. And then we've had interest in the UK and we've had interest in the Netherlands. And then we had somebody from, you know, the UAE reach out. But the thing about when you franchise internationally, you really lose some of the control of the brand. And so you have to make sure you have the right partner to do that, or you get a very watered down version of it or something completely different. And then also just from a financial perspective, you have to make sure that partner is one that you can be in business with for 20 plus years and know that, you know, you'll have, and we've met some great people. We just haven't been able to get to the finish line. We've been to the altar, I guess I should say. We've been to the altar, but we haven't tied the knot, so to speak, and done the nuptials yet. So always on the radar, just haven't moved that chess piece quite yet.
In Beam Light Sauna, tell us more about that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So in 2021, I met a woman named Cynthia Wagner, and she had, in Charlotte, she had moved from Washington, D.C. with her family down to Charlotte. Her daughter has Lyme's disease, and one of the treatments for Lyme's disease is to boost your immune system, and you can do that through infrared sauna. And so, and it just has healing properties. And so she, after, you know, loads of antibiotics and the normal stuff that people with Lyme's disease are prescribed, her doctor said, you really should be doing infrared sauna 4 to 5 times a week. So when they moved to Charlotte, they could not find one nearby. And so Cynthia said, well, I've got a business idea then. I'm going to start an infrared sauna studio. So she started a studio and opened the studio, built it out brick and mortar here in the Charlotte, North Carolina area in the United States. And her original studio had 6 private rooms, each with its own infrared sauna. And you would just book it for your 40-minute session through a membership or through a package. And then I met her and I wanted to see, yeah, and she wanted to franchise. And franchising in the States is very expensive to get into, and it's very expensive to maintain. The legal fees are crazy just with all the registrations. It's a very regulated process in the United States. I thought I was getting out of a regulated industry when I left pharmaceuticals going into franchising, but out of the frying pan, into the fire, quite frankly. So, you know, she wanted help around that, and I was looking for another concept as well. And so we got together, put together a partnership that made sense, and I, for the test, took our sales and marketing model that we'd built for Rockbox, like our customer acquisition model, of course, changed the, you know, the copy and the headlines and the graphics and all that. But the machine that we had built, I literally picked up and put it on top of her business to see what we could do with her business. And we doubled her business in about 4 months.
Whoa.
Which tells me, okay, yeah, this is a promotionally responsive business, which that's the kind of businesses I want to be in. I want to be able to spend more money and acquire more customers. That means that we can drive revenue when we need to and scale. So we put that together in 2021, spent about 14 months building the brand. We renamed that company also to Beam Light Sauna. And I built a flagship studio in downtown Charlotte back in early 2022. Fast forward to today, we have awarded over 200 licenses, and we have, I want to say, 65 to 70 in development right now, meaning they're looking for real estate, or they're in construction, or they're in pre-launch right now. So that one has taken off like a rocket. That one's going even faster than Rockbox went. And it's part of the fact that you have people like Joe Rogan and Andrew Huberman and a lot of these you know, worldwide podcasters talking about the benefits of sauna, talking about the benefits of infrared. And it's really helping drive the awareness in the lay public.
Excellent. And I think just from you sharing all these different examples, there's a skill set that you're building or you've got as well around helping people with businesses and so forth. And I just know that you're launching, or you've launched a new book called The Insider's Guide to Business, Secrets from an Entrepreneur's Playbook. Is that what the book's about? Tell us more about that.
Yeah. Yeah, thank you. I'm really proud of this book. And I'm the kind of guy, I had started along my career, I'd probably started a book, writing a book 4 or 5 times, and would get to, you know, chapter 4 or 5, and then just life would happen. I finally, about a year ago, hired a writing coach, which was basically just someone that would hold me accountable to make sure I got a certain amount of work done, you know, every week. And then also, I mean, you know, this is the best way to write. You know, you start with an outline and a skeleton, and then the whole write. I learned the writing process, which is a little different than we think it is before you actually learn how the magic happens. And one of it is you can't go back and edit until you're done with a whole book, which if you have any type of OCD tendencies, that'll drive you bonkers. Like, you can't even go back and fix the punctuation mark because you'll lose your flow. So I ended up writing this book, and it's called An Insider's Guide to Business. It's available on Amazon, I'm pretty sure worldwide. And all the proceeds go to charity. I'm donating all the proceeds to a charity that helps with mental health and suicide prevention, and because it's our national charity partner for Rockbox. But in this book, it's 11 chapters, and writing it was really the easy part. I did 7 full edits, cover to cover edits, to get the book down to just what people really, really need to know, and the stories that make the information stick. So there's usually a business principle, a business lesson, then a real life story that happened to me, or I was, you know, secondhand in the story, usually firsthand, and how that lesson, either I learned the lesson the hard way, or I applied the knowledge to be successful. And then, you know, then I go on to another principle and explain that and then have a story to explain that to really drive that home. And, you know, I've had, you know, so many people review it and leave remarks and DM me on it. And it's really helped a lot of people because instead of theory, instead of academic, which, you know, there's not, I have nothing wrong and nothing against, you know, all the academians that write books, but usually those are based on interviews of CEOs or interviews of successful people. And something's lost in the translation where, for me, I always got the most out of a book when it was a biography because I got all the business lessons, but I got the story to go along with it, which made it entertaining and made it more engaging. And so, you know, in this book, An Insider's Guide to Business, I really feel proud that I've taken sometimes complex subjects and made them ultimately simple so that, you know, a 15-year-old kid could read it or a 50-year-old woman could read it and it's going to resonate with them and they can apply it in a career, in a corporate environment, in an entrepreneurial environment. Because even in a corporate environment, you can be entrepreneurial in that environment. Mm. You know, if you're in a good company, and certainly if you own your own business or you're trying to scale your business, you know, I talk about how you start, staff, and scale. Like that's the key, is to staff and scale. And you know, there's a chapter on persuasion and influence. There's a chapter on marketing versus branding, chapter on the four things in finance you really need to focus on. You don't have to be a CFO, but watch these four markers and you'll always stay out of trouble. And so I could go on and on. Thank you for asking about it because I'm really, really proud of this book. And I know the more people that read this that are in business, it's really going to help them and save them some of the expensive lessons that I had to learn along the way.
Yeah, cool. We'll get that link off you and put that into the show notes. And I know that sure. You've got a podcast as well, Thrive More with Roger Martin as well, which sounds mm-hmm. exciting. So listeners, check out that podcast as well. Roger, based on what you've just been sharing, how did you actually get into leadership yourself?
So I was a sales rep. I started as a sales rep, and I would tell your audience, no matter what you do for a living, always, always, always continue to learn about persuasion, influence, human psychology, psychology of pricing, all that. Like it will only serve you, even if you're just a consumer, persuasion and influence is a great skill to understand. So that's where I started building my professional acumen, but I felt that I could impact more people as a leader, certainly when I was younger. There's no doubt about it. When I was in my late 20s and started leading people and had teams of 10 and then 40 and then 90. And I think when I was 30, 35, I had a team of 500, over 500 at a pretty young age. And you know, undoubtedly, when I was younger, it was very ego driven. You know, I want, you know, bigger span of control and all that. Like, I'd be silly not to admit that. But as I matured, and I think the gray hair I have now, you know, I've earned every one of those strands of gray hair, I realized that it's so much more about impacting people and the wake that we leave. You know, as we go through life, we're leaving a wake. And some people, it's barely a ripple, and I think that's sad. I want to leave as big a wake as I can so that those, you know, that those waves and those ripples that continue to go out affect people that I'll never meet. And what do I mean by that? I mean, if I have a direct report today and I have a lot of young people on my team, if I'm leading and performance managing and helping level up a 26-year-old, let's say, and he or she then gets into leadership and they're 28 or 30 or 35, and let's say they're not even with my company longer, but they're imparting the lessons that I shared with them, the knowledge that I was able to give to them, and they change someone's life who they're leading, who will never meet me, that means I've done what I came here to do, right? Like, you know, what I was put on earth to do. And so to me, leadership, it morphed from this ego-driven thing, and not that I don't have an ego today, like, of course I still do, but certainly from leadership, I enjoy winning more through others than trying to win myself. That was the change that happened probably in my mid to late 30s, where I found that, you know, what is this? It's Zig Ziglar, right? The more, you know, if you want to make all the money in the world, just help as many people as you can and the money will follow. And it is so true. It sounds trite, but it's so true. Mm. And I think that's, you know, I got into it maybe for the ego reasons, but I matured into it for what I feel now are the more noble and the right reasons.
Mm. It's good. And it's really interesting what you say about, you know, what we do and what we say, how it impacts others, but we don't know who they impact from there as well. And we can't measure that. So then the question I've got next would be, who impacted you? In other words, here's a question, which is, who's been your favorite leader? And now this person could be alive or from history. Is there a favorite leader you have or had, and why?
That is a great question, and one that I've been asked before, and I really, really, really wish I could say, yeah, there was this guy or this gal, and man, and for 5 years, they took me under their wing and all that, and I didn't get that memo. You know, like I, whatever line I was supposed to be in to get that mentor, I didn't. And so I always saw, now I had some good bosses, but I also had some terrible bosses, like truly terrible bosses that showed me, okay, don't do things this way. When you're in charge, do not do this, you know, this way. But I also had some bosses that I learned from, and I always tried to learn, even if, and that's a message to your listeners, is even if it's a boss that's truly terrible, like, because there are some bad leaders out there, you can learn what not to do. But also those bad leaders, they still have something that is good and they're good at that you can learn from and take that. And it only may be one or two things, right? But take that. I didn't have like one or two people, unfortunately, because I kind of wish I did. And I'm trying to be that for my team and for others, because the world, God knows the world needs more leaders. But I sought them out through books. You know, I liked going to school, I guess. I got better at school the older I got. Like, you know, high school, I don't know, man, like junior high and high school, I started to just not care as much. And then in college, I really got back into learning. Then I got my MBA and just loved it. And then I probably read close to probably 90 to 100 books a year, you know, more than one a week. And some of that's due to my podcast, because I want to read the guest books. And so I have to motor through those as they're coming up. But the one person I do want to share a story of a woman named Rita, who I reported to for several years. And she taught me a lot of things. I mean, she taught me so much about communication and about it's how you say it, not what you say. And she was so good at it. And she led by example. But I do remember that I was probably 29, I think, and working for her. And I was the kind of guy that, you know, if I was right, well, I was going to show you why you were wrong. And I'm not advocating that. So if anybody's listening, that's not what you should do. But that's who I was at 29. And I remember her walking up to me, and it was such a lesson in leadership and just impact. She walked in, this petite Southern woman, and she walked up to me and she said, after this meeting's over, and she goes, you know, Roger, you can prove your point without proving somebody wrong. And then just turned and walked away. Didn't chastise me, just said that in the sweetest voice and turned and walked away. And I'm, you know, this is what, 25 years later, and I'm telling you the story, you know, like that's the kind of impact it had on me. And I realized she's right. Like, I don't have to be a jerk when I'm making a point. I can just, I understand your point and that's valid. And I understand why, tell me more why you feel that way. Okay. Well, my experience has been this, you know, can we consider this point, which is just so much more conversational and allows to make the journey theirs. But that she was one of my better leaders for sure. Rita was great. But man, I really want to be, and I hope that more leaders listen to your show and self-educate and don't follow our politicians in the world, you know, and become real leaders, because people should be able to answer the question you just asked me with three or four names right off the top of their head. Right. And the fact that so many of us can't answer that question with three or four names, that's kind of sad. That's a sad state of affairs, but I think that's more the norm than the exception. And it's us, it's up to us. Like, there's no them, we are them. It's up to us to change that.
Yeah, totally. I love it. And wow, that impactful what Rita said to you, that was huge. If you and Rita were sitting on a park bench having a coffee, is there one question you wish you could ask her?
What would I ask her? I would probably ask her if she were me today, because like you can't go back, right? So if I could, as I started to think, you know, like what could I have done differently, or what did you see in me that, you know, you thought there was promise? That doesn't matter. That's ancient history. So I wouldn't want to waste it on that. I would want to say, I still know Rita. I still text her every so often, but if we were sitting on a park bench, I would probably say, what would you, knowing me, knowing who Roger is, what would you suggest I say to my team? What would you suggest I make sure I'm doing for my team? Because she knows me. So, you know, I would still want to get value out of it for my team and for people that will follow on and I'll lead later. And so I would actually ask for insight of what can I do today? I think it's so easy for us to go, gosh, what should I have done back then? Or what, you know, that's the easy question, but that doesn't change anything. It's how should I alter what I'm doing today to be even more effective.
Yeah, it's good. It's good because you're actually thinking forward, which is great, rather than thinking about the past, which you can't change. We can learn from it. We totally agree with that. It's just about what we can do going forward to allow us to thrive as leaders going forward, which is an important thing too. Yeah. Hey, look, the show here is called Leadership is Changing. When I say that title or that statement, what does it mean for Roger?
Immediately what comes to mind is, it hasn't been for a while, a command and control world where, hey, you're lucky to have a job, do what I say, don't ask why, just do it. I mean, there are still people doing that, but that is not effective. It's leadership is changing to where the average worker, the average person, the average employee is much more self-educated through social media, through whatever, through just the democratization of information, that the why we're doing it is just as important as the what. And you better darn well tell them why we're doing this, because if you don't, either one, they won't do it, or two, they'll just do the absolute minimum because they don't have any context. And, you know, Gen Z and younger millennials, they get a bad rap in a lot of areas unfairly. Well, some of it may be fair, but most of it's unfair because they care. You know, like my generation, Gen X, hey, how much money can I make? How fast can I do that? Okay, that's let's go. That was the carrot. It was always money or safety, security of a job. Where I think the younger generation, and I have a 23-year-old and a 20-year-old. I have two children, you know, 23 and 20. They are so much more interested in why. Like, well, why should I do this? Or why? What is my purpose? How is this going to impact my community? And, you know, shame on us. I don't think we asked that question enough when I was younger. And so I think that's why leadership's changed.
Yeah, cool. And I think when they say why and what should I be doing this, it's not them saying, I don't want to do this. And it's not them questioning it. It's saying, what's the purpose behind it? What's the value behind it? So then we can go on to it. I think a lot of leaders in the past, a lot of people, employees in the past, have done things in business just because they've been told to do it. And it's not that they're disobedient or anything like that. It's more about, is this the smart thing to do? Or are we doing things just for the heck of doing it, right? And it may not be the right thing to do. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. People, every man and woman needs to wake up in the morning and have a purpose. Like they have, when I see people that don't work, and I don't mean, you know, being retired is one thing, although I think I'd lose my mind if I retired, but like someone that truly has an able body and just chooses to not do anything all day and not do anything for weeks or months or years at a time, I don't know, one, how that person could ever be truly happy, and two, I don't think even physically or spiritually they're going to have a very rich or even long life, because we were meant to have a purpose waking up. No matter what you believe, there's in our DNA, whether it's I need to go out and hunt for my family, you know, or gather berries, you know, back in the twigs and or roots and berries back in the caveman days, or, you know, make sure I get a good high quality podcast out today. We have to have a purpose. If we don't, we drift. And when we drift, that's when we start making very, very poor decisions. And I think that's where a lot of Gen Zs are like, I want to know what my purpose is. Like, why did I get out of bed and come to your place of employment today? Like, I need to know that.
Yeah. And there's a book out there called, I don't know if you've read it, it's called Outlive. And it's about how you can live not to 80, 90 and just live to a longer or to 100. It's about how do you have a quality of life through to that age as well. And it comes down to things like having a purpose in life, but also, or having a purpose to go and do something that day. But the biggest one is about activity. And, you know, coming from rock box fitness and that, you'd be happy to hear that. Because I think it's so important that we are doing something from an activity basis every single day, which is important. So my next question is going to be around, because you are, and I and the rest of the world are living in a very, very fast-paced life, and it seems to be getting faster all the time. Technology is driving it, data, social, business, the whole lot. How does a leader stay or become successful in that fast-paced, ever-changing world? What's your thoughts?
That's a great question. My immediate thought is, one, you have to change with the times. If you don't change, you know, you're growing or you're dying. So you do have to change and adapt. That being said, it's so funny you bring this question up. I just told my team, I will not be on, we have the Google suite of office software, whatever. So we have Google Chat. So instead of Slack, you know, it's Google Chat. And I just told them, I said, I will not be on the chat. I will not respond to the chat. I won't even see the chat. I'm not going to look at the chat. To me, there's no such thing as multitasking. We all know that now. The data is clear as can be. You cannot multitask. There's task switching. Every time you task switch, you lose 15 to 20 minutes of focus and productivity. And so I guess my answer to you is you have to change with the times, but also as leaders, you need to be able to have the backbone to say, this is not effective. I choose not to participate in this, and I'm going to slow down parts of this so that we can keep that human connection. We can keep that face-to-face or Zoom call or phone call, something that is more analog than just this digital exchange. And so I gave you kind of a cop-out answer. I think you have to advance with, and you better embrace AI and know how to use it, or hire someone who knows how to use it, or you will get passed up. But I think as a leader, man, there's real power in slowing it down from the humanistic standpoint, because if you don't, you're going to lose that connection. And I think then you're at a competitive disadvantage. So the leaders that can adopt technology, but slow the roll in the office, or, you know, even if it's remote, to reintroduce some analog conversation, some analog exchange, to me, that's where you're going to win.
Yeah. And I think that slowing down to actually go faster again, and if you want to go faster. But yeah, I think you're right. There's so much happening. There's so much noise out there. Things are being thrown at you. And then how do you cope with that as well? Now, you and I have been talking about it through the lens, or leadership through the lens of a leader. If we were to switch lenses now and talk about the lens of an employee, how has employees' expectations of leaders changed?
I think it's changed. I know it has changed for the better, because people, again, the democratization of information, people can YouTube or Google and see what great looks like, what great leadership looks like, what a great speech looks like, what a great performance management discussion looks like. Like, it's not behind closed doors anymore. It's been democratized so you can see it, which I love. So I've seen employees over the last 30 years, again, you know, we've talked about the why, but what I've seen them expect from their leader is to be heard. Like, as an employee, I expect now to be heard. And again, I love this saying, like, everybody should have a voice. Not everybody can have a vote. If everybody has a vote, it's chaos. And we can't move as fast as we need to. But everybody should have a voice. And I think they expect to have a voice, as they should. They expect to have, and I preach this, an adult work. I think I even write about it in the book, an adult work environment. Meaning, if you live, let's say we're up in the suburbs here where our headquarters are. If you have a dentist appointment down in Charlotte, the city I live in, and you go downtown and it's 40 minutes away and it's at 2 o'clock, there is no reason for you to come back here to work another hour and a half and then drive back home. Like, just, if you live downtown, stay downtown, right? Adult, like, I know you'll work remotely and that's fine. We have unlimited PTO here. That can be controversial and it has to be managed, you know, and the expectations managed. But that adult work environment people are seeking out, because again, people can very openly discuss it now and realize, hey, I don't have to work for a dictator. I can work for a great person who trusts me, who entrusts the business to me, and treats me like an adult. And we can have a fair exchange of labor for dollars and input and intellectual capital for, you know, an adult working environment where I'm trusted and I can make adult decisions. They expect that other leader. And if you give that to your employees, you're going to have very low turnover, because even though I can say that to you and you can say that to me, most leaders are not there yet. No. They're not there yet. Mm. I wish they were, but they're not.
They're not. And I think some of them don't actually understand that they're not. They think they are, but they're not. Yeah. Very good points. If you had, because you know, you talked about before about with reaching that the past, but also really is about the forward, the going, you know, the future side of things. So if I was to get you to crystal ball out to start thinking about the future, where do you see leadership being in 5 years?
I would say, I would double down on that comment around slowing down. Mm. And by slowing down, I do not mean the pace of work. That is only going to get faster. With more information, you know, with more data, it's going to go faster. But the interaction with your employees, I think 5 years, again, we're talking about good leadership, great leadership, world-class leadership, is going to be my supervisor mandates time with me. So I have one-on-one time, and it's not performance coaching. It's helping me solve problems, helping me get the resources I need, helping me to identify courses, classes, books, things, podcasts that can help me grow as an employee to my next role, which may or may not be here. I believe, I'm already practicing this now, is, hey, this may not be your last job. In fact, it's probably not going to be your last job. I hope that whenever you leave here so much better than we found you, and that you only talk, you know, and say amazing things about our office and our team and our companies, even if there was a different, better, more suited opportunity for you somewhere else. We're going to throw a party for you when you leave because you contributed while you're here. And one thing I do ask is that everyone finishes impeccably.
Mm.
If leaders, if employees, if vendors, you know, and that's always a thing, right? You know, your vendors and the company, if people would just strive to finish impeccably, they would find that life would treat them so much better. They would have longer lasting relationships. And when, you know, something, when you need that vendor, when you need that employee's input, like we finish impeccably with our employees and I can still reach out to ex-employees and say, hey, do you know where you left that file? They haven't been here for 2 years, you know? Do you know where you left that file? You know what? I don't, but I could swing to the office and see if I could, you know, pull it up in the computer because we finished impeccably. Mm. And I think too many times people say, you know, somebody quits and the leadership team writes them off and shoos them out the building, you know, with their stuff in a box. And again, security reasons, and I can understand there's some reasons you need to sever ties immediately, but there's also a healthy, empathetic way to do that. And if I had a crystal ball 5 years in the future, I see a even more empathetic leader and a team that works synergistically together, knowing we're here for some time, but not forever. And that's okay. But let's have a mutual respect for each other and respect the business and what the business needs, because we both need the business to be successful, for us to succeed independently. And to me, I think when we get over the, well, if they're not with us, they're against us, that mentality, that's played out. That's just over. And let's treat each other like civil adults, you know, no matter what happens and what people decide.
Mm-hmm. I love it. I think that's really, really great what you're sharing there. And I think the thing is, a pro is always a pro. In other words, be professional all the time and the way you show up as well. Yeah, it's really good. Roger, it's been a real pleasure talking to you. If our listeners are wanting to get a hold of you, where should they go?
Yeah, great question. So the company we have several different franchises, and then I have some other brands and companies underneath that. It's all under one platform called ThriveMoreBrands.com. And under Thrive More Brands, if you're interested in our franchises, if you're in the States here, or if you're interested in, I think my book's on there as well, if you're interested in other companies we have, or if you're interested in franchising your business, that's the place to go. And then you can find me if you want to follow me personally. My social handles are Real Roger Martin. So it's just Real and then R-O-G-E-R Martin. And that's for all the socials. And I think if you go to realrogermartin.com, there's actually a website, realrogermartin.com. There's stuff on there about if I'm going to be speaking, or if I think you can buy the book on there as well too.
Excellent. I'm thinking about now whether I can find out who's the not real Roger Martin.
Yes. There's a Roger Martin. It's funny because somebody just sent me, it's so funny you say it. Somebody just sent me yesterday a picture of a book they were reading. And on the back, there was an endorsement, you know, like a testimony or something about this business book on leadership. And they were quoting Roger Martin. And they're like, oh, I just signed the back of the book. I'm like, nah, that's some professor in Toronto. Oh, there's another guy, a professor in Toronto. So I have to claim real Roger Martin. Yeah.
Excellent. Well, Roger, thank you once again. It's been a real pleasure talking to you today. It's been great. Thank you.
I really appreciate the time. Thank you so much.
Excellent. Well, there you go, listeners. Always learn about persuasion and influence. Impacting people, you want to leave a wake. You don't want to leave just a ripple. It's really important here. And the thing here is that we need to change all the time. But make sure you finish very well and in a way whereby your relationships are intact and that you can continue those relationships going forward. Hey, it's great being with you. Thanks for joining us. Until next time, bye for now.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Leadership is Changing with your host, Dennis Giannoutsos. Each week, we and our guests provide information and insights through exploring leading change, inspiring executives and leaders to adapt and lead a bigger game in a fast-moving world.